Welcome to InVision Radio with Will Bowen. Take some time to let your mind unwind. Now, here's Will.
Thank you, Dan Murphy. Well, welcome everybody to this, the second episode of InVision Radio. It's exciting to continue this process and do this with you. I'm learning little by little more and more how to do this better and better. I've bought a really nice studio quality microphone that I'm using, but you will probably notice that I need a pop screen, and I just ordered one. That is so that my voice doesn't when I'm speaking. But I do have one ordered, so we're going to get better and better as we go along. It's a great metaphor for life. Life is constantly changing. I'm looking at my window here on Lake Wacomas, and the trees are just exploding. It's like you are looking into a box of Kix cereal. Everything is raspberry red, lemon yellow, and orange. I don't think I've ever seen a more beautiful fall than we're having this year, and I hope your fall is equally beautiful wherever you are. We are going to talk today about something I consider to be fundamental to spirituality, to emotional well-being, to personal growth, and we're going to talk about it throughout the show, and that has to do with what we are putting into our minds, what we're telling our minds about our world. There was a book that came out decades ago called The Jungle is Neutral, and in the story, the author talks about how he had been warned that if he were lost during the war, this was during World War I, I believe, if he were lost in the jungle, that the jungle was a terrible place full of poisonous snakes and shifting sand and all of these terrible things. And then someone else told him that it was a paradise full of fresh fruit and clear water. And what he discovered, because he was actually lost, was that the jungle is neutral and our lives are neutral. If we begin to shift what we put into our minds, and if we begin to shift what we do with our minds, then our lives begin to take on a more positive characteristic. They begin to be more of the way we would like them to be. I want to open with a To You Love God reading that I wrote. To You Love God, once again, is something that I began several years ago, and it's a daily writing as if it were written by God. And I did this not only for others, but for myself. It's really kind of interesting when I receive these in the email, and even though they came through me or I wrote them, I find a lot of comfort and inspiration in them. So I want to share today's with you. And it begins, To you, meekness is power that knows its strength. Forgiveness is love that embraces the truth. Patience is acceptance of divine timing. Giving is investing in your own prosperity. Light is darkness that has surrendered. Passion is joy running ahead of itself. Understanding is the tearing down of barriers. Prayer is faith that there is one who hears and has the power to act. Peace is an unwillingness to be baited into conflict. Happiness is a decision made from moment to moment. Life is having fun and growing. I truly believe that our lives are about ultimately growth, that we came into this world to grow, and that our spirit has certain things that it wants to experience and to overcome and to heal in this lifetime. So life is about two things. Number one is fun, and number two is growth. The real purpose of our being here is growth, but the fun keeps us in the game. If you think about it, a relationship can be one of the most growth-inducing things there is, because being around another person for an extended period of time causes you to bring up stuff that is unhealed for you to work on. So there's growth. But what keeps you in the relationship? Well, there's the intimacy, there's the communication, there's the shared goals and ideals and hobbies and things. So life is all about having fun and growing. And yet, deep within our minds, there is this negative voice. Now, you know exactly what I'm talking about, because we all have one. It has been called a shadow. Ancient cultures and other cultures have called it the devil and demons, and it is being popularized today as the ego. The ego is that part of our minds that talks to us in ways that taunts us and causes us to question ourselves and our ability and our worth. Today we're going to talk with a Native American historian named Gil Nichols. He'll be my first guest in the opening segment of the show. And Gil's going to talk to me about how we might possibly begin to look at other people who get on our nerves as a way of realizing the growth potential that we have within our lives and how to tap into that. Later on in the show, in the Namaste Lounge, Bukeka Scholes is stopping by. She's going to be providing us with beautiful music that will help us fill our minds and our hearts so that we are focused more on positive experiences and we begin to embrace and begin to look for those in everything that we are and everything that we do. So a lot of fun stuff planned for us today. Thank you very much for being with us. Be sure and share this podcast if you like it with your friends. And be sure and check us out on the web at willbowen.com. Native American historian Gil Nichols joins us right after this. You gotta take it in.
International Health Partners has completed three major projects in Tanzania. Now our project is to build the first pediatric hospital there. 18 million children in Tanzania under age 14 have no pediatric hospital to serve them. At Zinga, on the coast north of Dar es Salaam, we have begun by starting the outpatient unit. We invite you to help. Visit our website, ihptz.org. Find out who we are and what we do, and contribute by clicking on Just Give, or call 480-540-9317 and make a credit card donation. Your money will help build the first pediatric facility, and care for children under 5 years old will be free. You'll receive information on how each dollar was spent, pictures of what's going on at the facility, and we do not sell our donors' names and addresses to anyone. So go online now to ihptz.org. It's an act of love and caring, and it will help to change the world, one child at a time.
Took away our ways of life. The tomahawk and the Bowie knife.
My first guest today on Envision Radio is Gil Nichols. Gil is a Native American historian. He has studied Native American culture for over 30 years. Not only has he studied it, he has also immersed himself in it somewhat. He has spent a lot of time on Native American reservations. He has developed close relationships with a number of Native American people who have invited them into their lives and into their homes. Gil has also taught Native American culture at two universities for a combined 24 years. And he's here with me to talk today about something that I consider to be absolutely fascinating, and that is sacred clowns. Gil, welcome to Envision Radio.
It's good to be here.
It's good to have you. Now, a couple of years ago, you and I were talking about Native American culture, and you were sharing with me some ideas. And one of the things that you shared with me just really, if you'll pardon the pun, and I'll explain the pun later, hit me like a thunderbolt, and that was the concept of sacred clowns. Now, can you explain to us what a sacred clown is?
The sacred clowns are found literally all over the United States and Canada, and probably south. But south is not an area I know a lot about, so I just want to stick to North America. And it's a phenomena that still exists to this day. And the sacred clowns are what are known as contraries. They act in opposites.
Now, we saw this actually in the movie Little Big Man and with Dustin Hoffman, when one of his friends, or actually I would say his great rival in the movie, goes off, comes back, and he's riding a horse backwards, and he has black and white all over himself and his horse. So that's an example of a sacred clown. Is that correct?
It is, yes.
What is the sacred clown's role within the tribal society?
The role was to turn the world upside down. and to turn you upside down, so to speak, so that causes you to go deeper. Native peoples and their spirituality is about conscious expansion.
Conscious expansion.
Yeah, expanding your sense of consciousness and broadening that out. So the sacred clown is always probing you to get beyond yourself and that kind of thing. And so what they do today and what they did historically and pre-Columbus was literally to boomerang to the opposites of any given situation that was happening in the moment.
And the purpose of doing this basically was to help people become more aware of the moment. As I understand in some of your writings, you talk about how the sacred clown is there to call into balance because people tend to swing too far one side or the other. Is that correct?
That's correct. Their acts are often absurd and paradoxical. And they do that to illuminate the reality by subverting assumptions about things.
Now, in the Lakota tribe, they are referred to as Heyoka.
Right.
And right. To this day, the Heyoka are very active in the sun dances. Can you explain to us what the sun dance is and the Heyoka's role in the sun dance?
Okay, the sun dance is the largest ceremony of the Plains Indians. It's currently being practiced throughout the summer. Months usually. And the Sundance is a sacrifice. Native peoples in their prayers pray for other people. Their prayers are seldom just about themselves. So when they're in the Sundance and the sacrifice, which is a four-day process, the dance itself, but it's actually 8 days, and there are 4 days of preparation and purification, and then you move 4 days into the actual dance, and in which time there's a total fast.
So let me reflect this for the audience. So for four solid days, these people dance, and if I understand, it's from sunrise to sunset with no food or water, and this is in the blistering South Dakota sun, typically in August, right?
Could be August, could be June, but somewhere during the summer months.
Yeah. Either way, it's pretty warm.
It's warm. Yeah, it's very warm, and there are ceremonial cycles, so in between cycles there are rest periods.
Okay. Now, this some of the dancers will also pierce their skin, pierce their chests. The men will pierce their chests and then pass elk bones through it and then lash the tips of the elk bones to a tree as they dance as an act of devotion, but also to help move themselves into that blissful, sacred space. Is that correct?
Yeah, the chokecherry is more often used than anything else in the piercing, and then that's tied to a rope, which is then attached to the sacred tree in the center.
So here are these people fasting, going through cycles of dancing for a period of 4 days in the sun.
Yes.
It's a very sacred experience, but it also is a physically demanding and exhausting one. So you would imagine that everyone would sit in quiet reverence. And yet then in comes the sacred clowns. What do the sacred clowns do during this sacred experience?
Well, in the middle of reverence, they take you to to the opposite end. Their job, the sun dance is an order. It represents order and concentration and focus. And prayers for other people during that physically demanding moment. The clowns come in and bring chaos.
Now, you have said that they will come in sometimes and have super soakers and soak the audience, soak the dancers. They will harass the dancers, et cetera. Is that correct?
That's correct. One of the most powerful, and this doesn't happen every year, but on the third day, I've seen this happen. Here they are without food and water, and they're in the third day, and they're pierced. And they're... praying for the health and well-being of the white man.
Wow.
It's one of the most moving experiences I've ever been through. The very people who have decimated their culture, they're asking for their health and well-being and happiness. And in the middle of this very powerful moment, here comes the clowns with their chaos. And they're squirting the Sundancers, and they're offering them water.
Which they won't take, correct?
They won't. They don't even look at the clown. They
got
it. Their right focus. And so as you're sitting there watching, you're watching this extreme play of opposites right before your eyes. And those opposites work perfectly together. This is what's amazing when you're watching the chaos and the order side by side in complete complementary position to each other.
You have likened the sacred clown to the yin-yang in Eastern teachings,
right,
in Eastern writing. And indeed, in I have a sacred clown Kachina doll right here in front of me on my desk that was gifted to me when I wrote about the sacred clowns in my book, Happy This Year. Mm-hmm. And he is black and white. So, but there's white in the black, there's black in the white. And so the sacred clown, from what I understand, is to say that within the sacredness, there is silliness, and within the pain, there is peace, and within the joy, there is sorrow, and vice versa. Is that correct?
Well, you put it about right, because they accept fear, they accept the pains of life, as well as the bliss and the joy. And it's all just part of being alive, and they dance together. Fear dances with courage. Without the fear, like the fear is the fertile ground of courage, the seeds of courage are planted there. So these dance together, and the black and white, especially among the Pueblo clowns in the Southwest, you'll see that more often. But you see it more mixed, up in the further north. But it is very much like that. One thing that's critical is that they're really talking about masculine and feminine energy.
The balance of the male and the female.
But not gender wise.
No, I get it. Energy wise.
Yes.
Correct?
Yeah. And so that's how, in that view, the universe operates with this nurturing relationship of wise and far-seeing energy, along with the aggressive, more targeted kind of energy, and they function in a complementary fashion together. So you have, like in the Southwest Kosha clowns, you have the black and white stripes, and you have the yin yang if you jump all the way over to the Tao. And basically, the Tao is almost identical
to the sacred clown, or the markings, at least, of those particular sacred clowns.
May I interject?
One of the things you had said to me, which I loved, and I just don't want to let this slip during our time today, is that the sacred clown reveals you to you. What did you mean when you said that?
The sacred clown keeps probing us into self-discovery.
And often through irritation, because sacred clowns will imitate people in the tribe sometimes too, as a way of saying you don't. It's that old Johari window thing, that there's a frame of a pane of glass basically that we don't see about ourselves, and the sacred clown does that. Is that correct?
Right. He continually reveals where you are in any given moment.
Okay. So in other words,
and where your ego, he triggers the ego, and the ego likes to stir the pot, and
right,
so you know immediately through your own feelings where you are in any given moment.
So the sacred clown, I love the concept when you say it, back, this was pre-Columbus, these people were in survival mode. And of course you needed a chief, you needed a leader, you needed a medicine man as a spiritual guide and a healer. But for them to designate somebody whose job was basically, as I've heard you say, go around and jack with people, is amazing, but what it does is it teaches people resoluteness. If somebody is messing with you, then you get to work it through. And I find, of course, the whole point I'm trying to make through all of this, as you well know, is that everybody who gets on our nerves is a sacred clown, and we're surrounded by them. But in our culture, we go home at the end of the day and we complain about that jerk at work or that rude woman on the bus or whatever. Right. Whereas in Native culture, they sit around the council fire and they give thanks for what they learned that day through the irritants or through the irritation of the sacred clown.
Right. There is that understanding. One correction I'd like to make
Please.
Is... pre-Columbus, these people lived very well. They weren't really in a survival mode.
Okay, thank you.
They had a storage of food. Say if there's a drought, no production, they could literally feed their community for 3 years with no production of any food at all.
Wow.
They had that much stored. And so... Their workload was probably less than ours today.
That's an important distinction, because we do tend to think, or I tend to think, through the lens of having the European society being here. But prior to that, of course, it was a very different story. One of the things I want to discuss real quick before we conclude is that you hooked me up with two modern-day sacred clowns, Reed and Anita Brown, and I went and spent Thanksgiving 2 years ago in their home.
Yeah.
Did sweats with them every night, which I had never done, which is an amazing experience, that the family comes together to sing and pray every night in a sacred lodge, sweat lodge. But they were telling me, and actually I think you were the first to share this with me, that 1 year the Sundance was going on, and through some confusion, the sacred clowns did not show up. And as a result, four of the dancers had to be hospitalized from heat exhaustion. It's the only time it's ever happened. So the point is that it seems like, Gil, as much as we'd like to live in this idyllic state, this heaven on earth, that possibly heaven on earth includes all of the chaos, all of the irritations, all of the things that reveal us to us. Would you agree?
I'd agree. And without the irritations and the chaos and the fears, there would be no courage. There would be no sense of, because courage is born out of fear.
Absolutely.
And so to embrace, I always, when I hear somebody say the glass half full, I always say it's also half empty. You
know, right.
Because that is just what life is like. And you can fully embrace the joy of life, in contrast to also the struggles.
It's not an either or, it's a both. Is that correct?
It is both.
And that's what the sacred clown is here to help us see.
They dance together. They dance together. And I'm sitting here right now looking out my back into the forest in my backyard, and the leaves are beautiful yellow, and the tree trunks are dark, the contrast is so complimentary, and I just sit here as I'm talking to you in awe. And that's the bliss.
It's the contrast.
It is the contrast.
It is the contrast. It's that balance between physical and spiritual that we're always trying to make. Gil, this has been so much fun. I would like to have you back, and let's talk more in the future about Native American culture and spirituality. Are you up for it?
I'd love to do that, yes.
Thank you, Gil, very much. Have a great day.
Well, thank you.
Bye-bye.
It's been a pleasure.
Maybe someday when they've learned, Cherokee Nation will return, will return, will return, will return, will return.
What's the best vitamin for happiness? Find out on page 31. How can you overcome the biggest obstacle to happiness? That's on page 85.
What's the fastest route to feeling happier? Check page 124. If you're looking for a manual for happiness, this is it. The book is Happy This Year, The Secret to Getting Happy Once and for All by Will Bowen. In this inspiring and practical book, you'll find proven real-world steps you can incorporate into your life to experience more joy in everything you do. This is the manual for happiness. In fact, the Dale Carnegie Institute of Asia selected Happy This Year as the textbook for classes on how to become a happier person. If you're serious about being happy, get Happy This Year, The Secret to Getting Happy Once and for All by Will Bowen. Available from Grand Harbor Press in hardback, ebook, and audiobook format read by the author. Your destiny is to be happy. Don't wait to be happy someday. Get happy this year.
Safe, secure, peaceful, satisfied. Safe, secure, peaceful, satisfied. Safe, secure, peaceful, satisfied. Safe, secure, peaceful, satisfied.
That's the song Safe, Secure, Peaceful, Satisfied by my next guest, Bukeika Scholes. She's joining me here in the Namaste Lounge. Now, to refer to her as Bukeika Scholes is the way most of us know her, but you have a new name. Bukeika, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Will. It's my great pleasure to be with you.
Now, what is your new name?
Bukeika Blakemore.
Blakemore. Congratulations.
Thank you.
My mother would have an absolute fit. You're never to congratulate the bride, she would always tell me. That was a Southern thing. You did not. You congratulated the groom. You never congratulated the bride. Because that would be like saying, well, you finally qualified and got married.
Yes. Well, congratulations are in order as far as I'm concerned. He's a great guy, and I'm very happy.
Yes, he is, and good for both of you.
Yeah.
Now, I call this segment, as I have shared with my listeners, the Namaste Lounge. And the reason I do that is because there is so much music that is of a negative nature, even unintentionally. It's heartbreak songs that we tend to listen to, and that has an impact in our consciousness. It bears in our minds, and my most recent book, Happy This Year, I write about a man who was a recruiter for skinheads, and he found that if he could get young people to listen to violent, angry, racist music, he could easily convert them to becoming a skinhead. So here in the Namaste Lounge, what I want to do is to spotlight people like you who are bringing music that is positive, uplifting, and affirming. And I especially like this song that we began with, Safe, Secure, Peaceful, Satisfied. In just a moment, I'm going to ask you to tell us the history of that song, but let's hear a little bit more of it.
On a lazy Saturday, partly sunny, partly gray, thinking about the things I've done and just how far I've come. Used to worry, used to trip about money and relationships. Now I put it all aside, 'cause I'm safe, secure, peaceful, satisfied. Safe, secure, peaceful, satisfied.
So, Bukeika, can you tell us, what was your inspiration for writing this particular song?
Well, there were several things. One of the things that in my life that's very important to me is spiritual practice, and I use several different things to just kind of open up my thinking, open up my heart space, and one of them are the creation of vision boards, and another is using EFT, which is formerly called Emotional Freedom Technique, and its nickname is tapping.
Tapping.
And
so just to be, let's make sure everybody's up with us then. When you say vision board, not everybody knows exactly what that is. That means that you take a board some sort of easel or something, and you place on it things that you would like to call into your life. Is that correct?
Exactly. What I want to manifest or what I want to demonstrate in my life. And I use a process that Maria Nemeth, who is an author of several books on how to vision, has a process that I really love, which is to have vibrant colors, bold lettering of the words that come into your mind. And I had on this particular vision board words that were like confident and worthy, and of course these words, safe, secure, peaceful, satisfied. So I was just looking at it one day and decided to incorporate tapping, or EFT, mm-hmm. with the words that were on the vision board.
Now, again, and when you say tapping, let's clarify that. That is basically tapping your skull, your hands, various places which help anchor in your body and your power centers things that you are trying to manifest or cause into reality. Would you say? Is that correct?
I would. And the points in which you are tapping on are in alignment with acupuncture points in the body, meridians.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of ingrains in your body, in your consciousness, and in your vibration what it is that you're wanting to experience or shift from an experience to that is not as favorable to one that is more favorable.
Mm-hmm.
So I was tapping on these meridian points, these words, safe, secure, peaceful, satisfied. And at that moment, the melody came to me and I began to sing it.
Mm-hmm.
Safe, secure, peaceful, satisfied. And it was so catchy to me that I immediately broke out of my practice into writing the song.
Oh, don't you hate it when inspiration interrupts meditation?
I know. So that's how that whole process began.
Wow. Well, I absolutely love the song. It is one that every time you sing with us, I always want you to do, because it truly is. What I find about this song is that, Sundays everybody gets together for church. They're all excited. They're all happy. And then come Tuesday or Wednesday, life begins to interrupt. And I can still, though, catch myself with this is almost like an underlying soundtrack, safe, secure, peaceful, satisfied. It's truly a beautiful song. And I understand that there was a woman who was going through cancer treatment who sort of played this unceasingly. Is that correct?
There have been a couple of instances where that's happened with this song, with a woman who had been given a diagnosis and played it over and over again. A woman who was very, very depressed played it over and over again. And I get those comments frequently with this song, that it ingrains in their thinking,
mm-hmm.
a place of being completely at peace, of feeling at rest, and taking away that sense of anxiety or panic or fear, because you are safe, you feel safe, you feel you're at peace, and there's a sense of satisfaction with your life, and which is what we all really want to have every day. So I feel very blessed that that it came to me as a gift, or I accepted it as a gift, and that it has been a gift to others and has also been a healing property for what I've been told several people.
Well, it certainly has. I mean, and it certainly is it's a very positive mantra. What it makes me think of is years ago, Brian Tracy wrote about the law of mental exclusivity. In other words, the mind, although it thinks 60 to 70,000 thoughts a day, it only thinks of one at a time. And if we can run through our minds positive things, that's why it's so important to say thank you, thank you, thank you, or whatever. But if we can just say, I'm safe, secure, peaceful, satisfied, continue to run that through our mind, it truly can have an impact on our consciousness. And another song that you do that is similarly melodic in that it is repeated almost like a mantra is Spirit is Alive. And that's the title of your CD track. Let me play a snippet from that. Okay, Bukega, I guess I would ask you the same question. Now, this, because I always am wondering, what is the artist doing when the art shows up? What were you doing? How did you call this this song from the ethers and create this song?
Well, this is a good one, because I was actually taking courses through religious science or science of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a spiritual or group or that evolved, that began through a gentleman by the name of Ernest Holmes,
mm-hmm.
Back in the early 1900s. And I was studying some of his work, and at the time which our class had to do a class project, I wanted to write a song. And
oh, beautiful.
One of the people that I really admire as a vocalist is Mariah Carey.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was listening to one of her songs, and she kind of had a real kind of quick quip that she was doing over and over again while I was working on this project. And I came across in one of the chapters I was reading in the Science of Mind textbook, Spirit is Alive. And I just started the kind of the mantra again, Spirit is alive, Spirit set me free, Spirit is alive, Spirit is in me, and kept that going. And the lyrics, just the rest of the lyrics kind of flowed from there. So that was a class project.
Wow.
Essentially.
Well, and it has certainly, I mean, it's, as we say, it evolved to your CD title and everything else. And before we get into your last song, let's tell everybody how they can connect with you. Bukeka Blakemore is my guest here in the Namaste Lounge. Bukeka, how can they reach you?
Well, my website is www.bukeka.com. So you're welcome to reach me via the internet. And I'm also on several online internet radio stations called one is called Django. So there, visitors can come and hear Spirit is Alive and Safe, Secure, Peaceful, Satisfied and rate it and comment on it. But you can certainly find my music on iTunes. And I would love for people to come visit, check it out, and take it home with you.
Wonderful. It's really great stuff. I have to tell you this. One of the things that I did, and I started off this segment by talking about the skinhead who was recruiting young men. I write about this in my new book, Happy Stories, or Happy This Year, rather. And I write about the importance of having an upbeat, positive playlist. And I actually have several. And in my book, I recommended you and your songs. And I feel like you actually must have written this one for the book, but I know you didn't, and that's Be Happy. Let me play a little bit of that.
Time, well, I could not write a love song if you paid me. It just was never coming out right. It was very, it was not authentic. It was just, you know, couldn't do it. But because of the transformational work that I've done in my life and how that has expressed in my music, at some point I was able to and call forth into my life, a relationship where we're both very just supportive of allowing ourselves to have our own personal happiness and to respect the happiness of our significant other. And I wrote that song about 3 years ago, actually, long before I met my now husband. And but it is really all about truly being authentically you with another person, and we find that to be very difficult, I think.
Boy, don't we?
We need to get into a relationship, we automatically feel like we have to appease, accommodate, change ourselves, or change the other person. That's just not what it's about at all. And that'll be the first thing to take a relationship in a direction that you don't want it to go. So Be Happy is a very simple message. I want to be with you. I'd like for you to be with me. And basically for us to both be happy as who we are.
As we are.
Greg, we are.
Exactly. Yes. Greg Bear, the author of Real Love, defines love as the desire for the other person's happiness. I mean, that's it. All I want is for you to be happy.
Right.
And yet you're right. It's always a struggle because we get with somebody and then we're like, holy cow, I really like this person. Well, maybe I should, you know, shave off an edge here or change this or whatever. And there's some inherent growth in all relationships. In fact, I feel that's one of the cornerstones. But at the same time, if we are shifting who we are, then that person is not in love with us. They're in love with a canned image of us. So
exactly.
It's almost impossible to have real love if you're not being your real self. So you answered what was going to be my next question, which came first, the song or the relationship? But it sounds like the song was an expression of an internal healing that it then allowed the external world to catch up and bring you this wonderful relationship. Is that, in your opinion, what happened?
That is exactly what happened.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? We bend the universe to suit our will, as Will Smith says. I love that. We create our lives by what we think, and playing music over and over in our lives that is upbeat, that is positive, that reminds us that we're powerful, that we're strong, as opposed to, you know, songs that tell us that we're limited or that violence is the answer or that love doesn't come. Man, it sure makes the glass not only half full but overflowing, doesn't it, Bukeka?
Yes, it does. And overflowing is lovely.
Yes.
Especially with love.
With love. One more time, tell us how people can get in touch with you, please.
www.bukeka.com. Look me up on iTunes. Look me up on Django. And give a comment. I'm all over YouTube. Get on YouTube and go to my channel, which is simply Bukeka. And show me some love.
Sounds great, Bukeka, because you've got a lot of love to share.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Bukeka. Have a great day.
Will, thank you. You do the same. Appreciate you very much.
Same here. Bye-bye.
Secure, peaceful, satisfied. Safe, 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 secure, peaceful, satisfied.
People are searching for happiness today more than ever. In fact, every year, the word happy is Googled 259 million times. If you're searching for happiness, or if you're a happy person wanting to get happier, you've found the right place. Now, back to InVision Radio with Will Bowen.
Thanks, Dan. If you want to know more about sacred clowns, then look into or check out my book, Happy This Year. I talk a lot about sacred clowns and this idea that we can look at people as demons, basically, in our lives to assault us and give us no end of grief, and that just makes us victims in our lives. Or we can look at people as reflections in our lives, people who are sending back an image to us for us to work on. And so that makes everybody a blessing in our life. I was talking with Reed Brown, a modern-day sacred clown, a heoka, and he and I were talking about this idea that human beings are all born with an internal heoka. I've always tried to understand, if we live in a benevolent universe, if we live in a universe run by a loving God, why is there this voice inside of our heads telling us that we're no good, or we can't do this, or we should have done this, or we shouldn't have done this? Why is there this voice? And so Reed and I were talking about this, and Reed said that what we call an ego, he would call an internal heoka, that we all have this internal heoka. So why do we have it? Well, very possibly it's there to do the same thing that other or physical sacred clowns are there to do. They are there to, it is there to reflect us back to our state. We always have this going on back in our head. This, as Don Miguel Ruiz talked about, these two wolves that are fighting in our heads. One is the good wolf, the benevolent wolf, and the other one is the angry, malicious wolf. The ego is that angry, malicious wolf. And he and I talked about this idea and wondered, why do we have this? Well, it's there to move us forward, actually. So often when someone is against a position that we have, let's say you have a certain belief about something And you believe pretty strongly in this, but somebody disagrees equally strongly. Well, you have an opportunity. You can either dismiss that person or you can examine your own belief and see if it is something that you truly value, and it actually makes you stronger in your belief so often. If you do that, and when you're being questioned or told you're no good, and it's in your head, and then you can challenge it and say, oh yes, well, what about this, and what about this, and what about that, and what have I done? And most of us don't even realize that there's these two forces going on in our heads, that there is this sacred clown, and then there's us, the truth of who we are. A very good example of the ego was represented in the movie The Life of Pi, where this young boy was stranded on a life raft for 277 days with a man-eating Bengal tiger. He can't leave the life raft and lift. He goes off on a smaller raft for a very short period of time. But other than that, he has to stay on the raft, and that's where all his rations are. So the life raft is like our human bodies, and we've got this innocent side of us. And then there is this part that challenges us all the time. At the end of the movie, after living 277 days, he thanked the tiger. He said that the tiger kept him alive because it was a constant struggle to stay alive so the tiger wouldn't devour him that kept him alive in the life raft stranded at sea. Perhaps it's this constant egoic intrusion into our psyches trying to put us down and tell us there are things that are wrong with us that keeps us moving forward. And maybe we can actually use that to our advantage. One of the practices that I have begun doing is when I take my dog out in the morning, I give myself the sermon. Some might call it the pep talk. Whatever it is, it's my time. Because I find that my ego usually gets up a few minutes before I do. I wake up and there's a thought, there's a concern, there's a question, there's a worry, whatever it is. And that's all it is. It's a thought form. And I wake up and I have this thought form. And then I go and I take the dog out because that's the first thing I have to do unless I want to clean something up. I take him out. And while he's outside, I am standing there and I am just telling myself what a great day this is and how great it is that I even got to wake up this morning. And all the wonderful things I have in my life and all the wonderful things I have to look forward to. And so basically, I am attempting to put my ego into its place before the day even begins. And every time it rears its head, I push it back. That's another interesting part of the movie, The Life of Pi. In one point, Pi, the young boy, tries to tame the tiger. And it seems like he's going to be successful at first, and then he realizes he can't tame the tiger. That is, it's always going to be a malicious, predatory beast. He can't tame it, but he learns how to train it. He learns how to train it. I don't believe we ever tame our egos, and nor should we. It's always there to keep us pushing forward, but we can train it. We can put it in its place, and the way we put it in its place is by affirming, acting, and living the highest we can. Be sure and check out Bukeka Shoals online at bukeka.com. And have a wonderful, wonderful week this week. Look forward to talking to you very soon. This is Will Bowen. Check us out on the web at willbowen.com. Facebook, www.facebook.com/acomplaintfreeworld. Have a great day. Bye-bye. When you're happy like a